Hello and welcome to Science Unscripted. It's Connor here.
And Gabe. Loneliness, Connor. Loneliness. In the United States, people are listening there, this affects just about 7 out of 10 of you. 65% of the United States, according to the latest survey, says that they suffer, or they're lonely.
So, okay, 3 people are walking down the street randomly. Yeah. 2 of those 3 would say, I'm lonely. Yeah.
And on top of that, by the year 2030, half the United States is going to be obese.
Well, that's also bad, but very different.
The connection is the science here. Out of UCLA, they did a study. They were looking, investigating the neural pathways or the connection between loneliness and maladaptive eating behaviors.
Okay.
And obesity and body fat percent.
Whether one leads to the other. Right. And actually, that leaves me wondering which direction it goes.
Well, that's a question that, unfortunately, this study is not going to be able to answer, but let's get into it first. It was only 93 participants, and very important here, only all female.
Mm-hmm.
100% female, 93 participants. 39 of them, according to self-reports, there's a way to measure that. It's called the Perceived Isolation Scale. 39 of the 93 scored high on this loneliness
mm-hmm.
test.
Mm-hmm.
Then they also asked these people about their bodies and also some of their mental health symptoms. It turns out the ones that are lonely, more of them are depressed and also have a higher body fat percent.
Mm-hmm.
On top of that, these researchers, and this is where it gets important, they looked at their brains. fMRI, that thing I went in, the tube I went into in Nijmegen, gave me a look at my brain. They wanted to see what's going on inside these lonely brains that could explain this connection, and absolutely there is something. In 2 of the regions, and bear with me here, this is the inferior parietal lobe and the lateral occipital cortex, higher reactivity when these people looked at food.
Okay.
So take these brains that are the people, even they say they're suffering from a loneliness. Mm-hmm. They look at 2 objects. One's not food, the other is food. Way higher activity in their brains than other brains. And then they had these people look at savory foods, salty foods, and sweet foods. When looking at the sweet foods, way higher activity in these 2 regions, which are responsible for impulse eating, but also executive control.
I'm hearing this for the first time, but there's an evolutionary biological logic to that, right? If you are separated from the tribe hundreds of thousands of years ago, you're on your own.
Hmm.
Your access to food has gone down, right? In a sense, you don't have anyone who's going to go out hunting for you, and then you share the spoils.
Yeah, if you're hunting alone, you're going to have less food than if you're with the group.
Feast and obviously feast and famine. And one of the best things you could do is load up on fat. And one of the best ways to load up or to create extra reserves of like a calorie bank for the future would be through sugar.
Yes. It seems that sugar, it could be related to dopamine or what sugar does to us. The reward system is all messed up, executive control. But then again, this study here, this experiment or this examination is cross-sectional. This is not longitudinal. They're not looking over time.
Mm-hmm.
So you can't establish causality, but you can definitely say based on these results that there's something going on in a lonely brain when it comes to maladaptive eating behaviors, cravings. It seems like sugar has a bigger impact on their brains. They get hungrier.
Right.
So we could be talking about neurochemistry. If you look at the connection between a lonely person or loneliness and obesity, it could just be neurochemistry, right? And that can be fixed.
Before it's fixed pharmaceutically, some of these facts are clear, but now to speculate or extrapolate, if you're lonely and you were able to solve the loneliness problem, then the unhealthy eating habits might begin to
automatically
go away.
Fix themselves. It is, of course, idiotic for us to sit here if somebody who is suffering from loneliness is listening to this right now, just go out and
make friends.
Yeah.
It's easy.
Go make friends. No, that is not. But any little thing.
Yeah.
If you've got family and friends that you haven't reached out to for a while, or if there's something in the way,
mm-hmm.
good Lord, this could have not only an impact on your mental health, but also certainly, it's good for your mind and your body.
I will just tag on to that by saying I recently downloaded an app. I don't download many apps, onto my...
You're not an app guy?
I'm really not. Mm. And when I download them, I don't usually use them. There's one that I haven't acted on it yet. It's called Meetup, and I don't know where it comes from. And I'm not making money by recommending this. I haven't gone and used it. The whole purpose is to meet up with other human beings who are looking to meet up with other human beings in a platonic setting. Some of them, there's some romantic stuff there as well, but it's like philosophy or going for a walk or sitting down and drinking beers at an Irish pub, whatever it is, there are probably a multitude of similar apps out there if that's a route that you'd be willing to go down, or a road you'd be willing to go down to try to meet people.
Now, this won't be the last time that we talk about loneliness. I mean, that number, 65% of the United States of America is lonely. That is not only an epidemic, that's endemic. That is never going away.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, this is...
That's extreme.
Yeah.
That's extreme. I'm going to jump into some science, some underwater science.
Okay. Let's dive into it then.
Wow. So we talked, a couple weeks back now. We were in the waters of Hawaii, off the coast of the island of Maui, I believe.
Whales, right? Killer whales?
Humpback.
Humpback whales.
Humpback whales, where it was the first documented episode ever of a sexual encounter between whales, or between humpback
whales.
Turned
out that was more of a rape than anything else, right?
I described it as sexual assault. One of the whales was injured, possibly a broken jawbone, and the other male approached it and...
Took advantage.
That's it. Yeah, and we are going to... That was new. And again, I kept saying, like, at the end of that, wow, how little... The fact that we'd never had any documented sexual encounters between humpback whales, that's crazy. There's so much more we still need to know. Well, here's a new chapter.
And humpback whales? Or
humpback whales.
Yep.
Yeah, humpback whales. This time we're moving over to southern Alaska, where the study has just come out recently, but about 2 or 3 years ago now, researchers were out on a boat... And they talked to a whale. They communicated with it.
How?
Well, let me go ahead and bring up the first audio here. And what you're about to hear is the sound that was emitted from the boat at the humpback whale. Mm-hmm. And then it's going to go quiet for a couple seconds. Just bear with me. And then you're going to hear the response.
Did it burp in response?
That's exactly what it sounds like. No, this is either a whoop or a throp.
Whoop or a throp.
A whoop.
Is that what they do?
They whoop or they throp. So in with humpback whales in particular, they have a really rich vocabulary, a musical vocabulary of language. They can talk over long distances.
Okay, so whoops and throps, they're more than one whoop and more than one throp.
The whoop and throp specifically, out of the, I think, 40 identified whale calls.
Oh, got it.
A whoop or a throp is kind of like, imagine you're out in the forest, and you know someone else is out in the forest, and you want to get their attention, but you don't know where they are.
You burp.
Well, that'd be one way if you have a powerful burp. You might do something like, yo, or hello, or something like
Anybody
that.
Anybody out there?
Anyone out there? Yeah. And then a couple seconds goes by, and then you get the... Hello? And it's kind of the same thing back.
Just me.
Yeah, yeah. Now, that's exactly what happened. And the way they did this is the researchers were on a boat. And the day before this happened, there were 9 humpback whales kind of off in the distance, somewhere close enough. They recorded that sound that they then later emanated at this whale and then played it for her. So this whale, her name's Twain. She's 38 years old, and there's a database. They looked at the flukes. They know exactly who this whale is. Mm-hmm. This whale, it was just a coincidence. The very next day, it was within 100 meters of the boat. Mm. So it's going around, and crucially, it was isolated. So they knew if we get a response, it's going to be from that whale. So it's going around, and over the course of 20 minutes, they did this multiple times. They had hydrophonic speakers down below. They also had microphones underwater, and they put the sounds out. And the real delay there, I kind of shortened it because I think our radio listeners might have freaked out and thought that the radio had gone dead, was something like 10 seconds. So they emanate it, and they need 10 seconds. The reason for that is, unlike humans, like when I stop talking, you typically, within 200 milliseconds, will know that it's time for you to talk.
Yeah, to avoid an awkward pause.
Yeah, and we're not only very good at that, we're very quick. Now, if you go back to the forest scenario, you're a whale, you don't know, is there another whale around? It's harder to know when should I talk, and so there's just a longer gap. So again, over 20 minutes, they did this 35 plus times, And what I found funny, I don't think that was really reported much, was if you imagine it from the whale's perspective, it's swimming in the water. It probably knows it's mostly alone, and then it hears a whale talk to it, right? That's obviously what it is.
And it's probably wondering, where is the whale?
And then it swims over.
Yeah.
And it's a boat. And I have to imagine, humpback whales are intelligent creatures that after 38 years...
Well, they understand causation.
Of being on the...
If I hear the sound of a whale, I'm assuming a whale is going to be there.
Right.
And not a boat.
And then you go up close and you're
the
like,
bottom
no,
of a boat.
That's a boat. How did this boat develop whale language? How is the boat talking to me now? So what's funny is they ended up categorizing this whole experience, this 20-minute sequence, into three phases. The first one was engagement. That's where the whale's like, wow, another whale. And then goes over and like, huh? It's a boat whale? Is it a boat or is it a whale? Mm-hmm. Phase two was agitation. And I can totally understand this from, it's like, hello, 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 hello. How long can that go on before you're like, what is this? This is idiotic. Yeah.
Stop it.
And I don't even think, like, it'd be like if you heard a hello from the forest and you walked over and it was a tree talking to you.
Yeah.
At first you'd be like, this is crazy. This is amazing. But after a while, this is stupid. It has one word that it's saying to me over and over again. Yeah. I'm out of here.
This conversation is going nowhere.
Yeah. So how do you tell if a whale is agitated or annoyed? It breathes differently. They have something called wheezy when it goes up to the surface.
Like asthmatics?
It's a different kind of blow. It's not going up there just for the purpose of respiration.
Oh, okay.
Or they call it reverse forced surface blows. Anyway, if you're a cetaceous researcher or whatever that field is called, you can recognize these as agitated blows. Mm-hmm. And after a certain period of time, this thing's like, this is kind of making me annoyed. Mm-hmm. And then after the 20-minute episode, it swam off.
Sure.
But it was clearly a case and a first, at least with humpback whales, this intelligent species, of us human beings communicating with it. We said hello, it listened and said hello back, or a whoop or a throp, something like that. Mm-hmm. These whales usually use this to find out where, like mothers will try to figure out where their calves are, mm-hmm. right? It's scary, it's dark, it's deep water. Where are you? Mm-hmm. And we did that with them. And what kind of, it took, I kind of read past it at first when I was looking at the study, but involved in this, it was the Alaska Whale Foundation, that makes sense, the University of California, Davis, okay, fair enough, mm-hmm. and then SETI. So SETI is the Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligence.
Extraterrestrial.
How if...
Whales are terrestrial, aren't they?
They are, but if of the more than 1 trillion galaxies... they say our galaxy has possibly 1 trillion planets in it, 300 billion stars, maybe 1 trillion planets. Yeah. There's probably life out there. How do we communicate with them? This is kind of...
technology that they're developing.
Yeah, figuring out how we would do that. I found that really interesting. Mm-hmm. Last thing I'll say is for anyone else out there who's inspired to go, I don't know, buy audio equipment and do similar things, don't.
Why not?
It's unethical. So in
to mess with them.
In general, you don't... record animals and play their sounds back at them. In anyone who loves birds,
could be distressing.
Yeah. It's a pretty well established rule in the birding community that you don't do that. That you don't attract birds so that you can get the perfect photograph by luring them in with acoustic recordings. That's just not okay.
What if I imitate their sounds with my mouth in my backyard? Is that not good too?
That's somewhere in between, in that gray zone. There's a terrible, possibly apocryphal story about the recorded sound of an elephant that had died being played back to its family members,
and then
who freaked out. It'd be like if your grandfather or father had passed away, and then they play his voice from the forest, Gabriel, right? You would lose your mind.
The Lion King, right? When Simba was visited by Mufasa out of the clouds.
Exactly.
Remember. Remember.
It's exactly like that moment. So don't play things back
tough
to animals
yeah.
unless, like in this case, you have explicit permission from the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration.
Got it.
But a very fascinating study. Again, a first.
Comments on that and anything else that you guys have to say to su@dw.com. Thank you. Goodbye.
Well, not by yet. Not by yet. One last thing here. I was so moved, inspired by the story of Twain the whale.
Any relation to Mark?
It must be. So Mark Twain, do you know what the pen name means?
No. Samuel Langhorne Clemens was his actual name, right?
And on the Mark, Twain was a way of saying that there is the river is 2 fathoms deep. A fathom is 2 meters, so that would be 4 meters deep or roughly 12. So the steamboat could go through.
Ah.
So a twain is 2 fathoms, and somehow I think they I don't know.
The distance.
A depth in this case, yeah.
Sure.
So what I decided to do, once in a while we have little updates on AI. I'm not going to say much here except that you can now generate entire songs using AI.
And you generated a song for twain?
For twain. It's called The Ballad of Twain the Curious Whale.
In the azure depths where sunlight wanes, a humpback named Twain, wise and arcane. Her flukes brush constellations, her heart a sea-bound flame. At 38 years old, she knew the sand. She knew the rain. Well, she'd seen her ancient brooch of bell to sailors and divers who dare to dwell. From she'd call her song a cryptic plea as humans blinked, bewildered by the sea.
Science Unscripted.